Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio, where the W's are flying proudly. Congratulations to the Cubs and their fans. Advancing to the World Series, it is a huge historic event sports-wise. Cody had absolutely no idea what that meant. We'll be talking about the Cubs, of course, a little bit on the program tonight, especially after 6:30. The creator of JustOneBadCentury.com, Rick Kempfer, will be here. He is a lifelong Cubs fan, and finally, his fandom is paying off. After years of frustration, decades of torment, it's all culminating in what is joyful to this point, and hopefully at the end of next week will be even more joyful. So we'll talk some Cubs. I want to talk to you too about what you're feeling now, and also because, listen, as much Cubs hysteria as is going on in the city, there are some people who are not Cub fans, not sports fans. So are you getting on board? Are you feeling left out? Are you ignoring all of this? Anything you want to talk about Cubs-wise, 312-981-7200. That's the number for the phone and the text. And if you want to keep up with us on social media, and who doesn't? Oh, we are so big on social media. We're huge, Cody. We're polling. I think we're leading all the polls in social media. Every online poll says we are the best at social media.
Everyone.
Yep, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter.
That's impressive.
Yeah, of course it is. We're huge. Huge.
Huge.
Huge when it comes to social media.
Mm-hmm.
We use pictures and everything. Pictures and words. And emoticons. We use all three.
I was about to tweet a photo.
Really?
Should I tweet some emoticons with it?
Add an emoticon to the photo. It makes our tweets even more huge.
You're right.
We want to be the best.
And
always.
Hashtags.
I hashtag everything.
Do you?
Yes. Hashtag that hashtag. I hashtag everything.
Meta.
It's exactly. Know my meme. I don't even know what that means. It's a new site we went to because we're learning things here. I always try to be in touch with what the kids know.
Know your meme.
Know your meme.
Yep.
See, I didn't learn it well enough.
Man.
I'm still jet lagged. That's the problem. I'm woozy. Let's just put it that way. I've been home for, I don't know how long, a day, day and a half from España.
In Spain time or in U.S. time?
Right. See, this whole time travel thing and time zones, it made me very crazy. I do know that at some point I was, as I awoke abruptly every morning at 5 a.m. in Madrid, and my mind began racing and trying to do math conversion of what time it was here as opposed to what time it was there and how little sleep I've gotten. And then I started, you know, once my mind starts racing, forget about it, and I just lay there trying to go back to sleep. And we all have that problem, you know, when you don't have to be up and you're just wide awake. You're like, oh, why can't I sleep?
Your iPhone didn't do that thing where it shows two clocks? My Android
two
did
clocks.
That. My Android did that when
yeah, but
I was...
Yeah, that's right before it blows up and scars your face.
It shows on the left, it says Chicago time, and then on the right, Madrid time.
Oh, that's beautiful. Ah. I don't have that.
Mm. There's probably an app for that.
I only want to know what time it is where I am.
Hmm.
I live in the moment, Cody. I don't live in the past. The USA was the past. Now the USA is the moment, and Madrid is the past.
So you were in the future.
I broke the time-space continuum. You know how much I screwed with time? The Cubs are in the World Series. That's how much I got. I screwed up everything. And now the Cubs are in the World Series, and Roger will not take off his Cubs hat until mid-November, I predict. How excited are you, Roger? You are also a lifelong Cub fan.
Yes.
You're a lunatic Cub fan.
Mm-hmm.
Long-suffering. Would that be another adjective that we can
prescribe
to you?
Yes.
I think that goes to most Cub fan, long-suffering.
Yes.
So you were working last night, weren't you?
Yeah, I got in about, I want to say about 10:30.
Okay, so right after
so the game was over. Yeah.
And were you still weeping?
I was holding it back all night.
Did you have to come down here, you and the guys from the beat, all doing the Cubs? Did you guys all like hug and embrace and just
we were busy. We were busy doing stuff.
Wow, the one night. All of a sudden, the first night.
We're always Curry's, busy doing
boy,
stuff. Come on.
We were busy doing stuff, yeah. Brian. Don't trivialize this. We were covering all the action. While you were doing whatever it is that you
were
do.
Sleeping.
I was not sleeping. I was
really?
Listening
oh my.
To the show because I left the theater at, I don't know, 11:30, 11:40. So I was right in the middle of the hoopla.
Oh, yeah.
I was at the corner of Belmont and Sheffield.
Oh, my.
I was
God.
In. I was knee deep in it.
You were knee deep in Cubby Nation.
I was. Oh, Cubby Nation was out in force. Mm-hmm. As they should be. Listen, yeah. I don't begrudge Cubby Nation being out in force. What I do begrudge is the off-key singing. A lot of off-key singing last night. That's the only. If I had one liquor. Complaint about the celebration, yes. That's all it would be. People cannot carry a tune in a bucket. But other than that, everybody seemed to be having a wonderful time.
Not the honking?
The honking doesn't bother me because I don't live there. If the parade had extended out to my neighborhood and there were still honking at that hour, I would have been, you know, upset. But seeing as I just got in my car and left, the honking didn't bother me.
So I was walking on Southport to the music box, and traffic stopped. But you get people just lay on their horn, and when traffic is stopped and you're laying on your horn,
oh, that's loud.
It's a little much.
No, I was even Waze had a hard time getting me out of Wrigleyville last night.
Waze?
It was like the Waze app. I used the Waze app.
Oh, is that the one that shows the traffic patterns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Takes you all over. But it was like Escape from New York. I felt like Kurt Russell in a post-apocalyptic future where everybody was waving flags of the country of W. So I was really trying to get out as quickly as possible. Just because I knew at any moment they were going to start, you know, streets could be shut down, and who knows what all was going to happen.
The city came out this afternoon, estimated that at the height of the celebration last night, there were 300,000 Covey Nation fans celebrating. That's OEMC held a press conference this afternoon.
That's not
they
bad.
Estimated 300,000 in the neighborhood.
But when the Hawks won the parade for the Hawks winning the cup, that was a million, right?
So well, that was the parade.
Well, that's the parade after. This is just after the game
last night
to win the pennant.
I'm still a little surprised.
I
thought it'd be more.
They stopped pedestrian traffic on Clark at about 3:30 or 4 o'clock. I mean, it was early. They were trying to keep people away from the park.
And they had the exits closed on the drive at Belmont, so no one could get down off of the drive at Belmont to come down to the game during or after.
And there was a lot of law enforcement along Belmont and along Sheffield and along Clark.
And you figure they started with 42,000 people at the park itself.
Right.
And then count the people hanging around the park.
I'll tell you what, the economic boon for this city and that neighborhood in particular has got to be unbelievable because every horrible bar had lines out the door. Your favorite 4 o'clock bar.
Big City?
Yeah.
Are they open again?
They're open, and they were packed, according to reports from the young cast members. They knew all the bars that were open.
That bar doesn't usually fill up till about after 2 a.m., so that's impressive.
Oh, I bet it was filled up by 2 p.m.
Well, it was funny because everybody was coming off their college football drunk and rolling right into their...
into the Cubs
game drunk.
Plus, they got an early start on it because the Hawks played last night.
That's right.
And that was a great game.
Well, sure, but, you know, Hawks fans were watching that, but I'm guessing the local ratings were probably not as big as normal.
Oh, no.
It's exciting. So here's the thing. We'll get into this after the break. But, you know, now, as someone who is well known to not be a Cubs fan, I'm a Sox fan, I'm still enjoying this, but I know it's not my party. So how much can a non-Cubs fan get involved without being accused of being a bandwagon jumper? So we'll talk about that on the other. Hold on. After that, that's called a tease, Roger.
Ooh.
That's how we do it. I set it up. I go to the break. People call in at 312-981-7200 or they text or whatever. And then we come back and we talk about it. It's Radio 101. I know you're busy upstairs doing things. I'm busy down here doing things. Like a little thing I like to call a show. Hey, doing anything on Thursday between 3 and 7? Cody's working. Other people might not be. You might want to head down to Frankfurt because the Hometown Voices Tour is heading there and the Rokan Show is going to be there. Trick or treat on over to the next stop of the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. The Rokan Show. Ro, Anna, Kevin, Judy, my man Jeff Carlin, Brian Altimer, everybody will be down there via letter probably. Thursday, August 27th at CD and Me in Frankfurt from 3 to 7. CD and Me, a fine venue. You know, I used to live down there, Cody, right near CD and Me. Sure, it was fine living in Frankfurt. See the Rokan Show in costume. hear live music from Jim Peterik and the Ides of March and special guest Rich Kaz as horror movie host Sven Gulli joins the broadcast, too. Wear your Halloween costume to compete in the costume contest. You'll get a chance to win tickets to see the Northwestern Wildcats take on Wisconsin and Illinois in the last home games of the season. And someone will walk away with a one-of-a-kind Chicago Blackhawks painting created by Elliot Fromm of Artbeat Live, whose artwork has generated more than $150,000 for Blackhawks charities. Not too shabby. Wood-fired artisan pizza from Wooden Paddle Pizza of Orland Park is going to be available for purchase during the broadcast as well. Register to attend to get details at WGNRadio.com/events. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour is presented by Allstate, Chicago's own Good Hands. So if you're free on Thursday afternoon, that'll be a lot of fun. And I told you I saw the Ides of March in over the summer at the zoo, where the Ides of March we'll see at the merch tent. That was their big tagline at the end of the show. It was fantastic. I don't know if they're going to bring the merch tent to CDME. One can only hope that you'll be able to pick up some Ides of March merch. All right, I was asking the question because, listen, I'm excited for my friends who are Cubs fans. Roger is sporting his gear, as he will be for the next week. What is that jersey, though?
Actually, this is a WGN Radio softball jersey because I wore my Who's on First jersey last night, so I had to had to get that cleaned.
You couldn't find a guy with a bunch of Cubs jerseys in his trunk?
No, I don't. I've got Cubs stuff. I mean, this is the hat's good enough for me.
Okay, the hat's good enough.
Right. But I thought I wore the because of course because
you're mixing sports.
Hold on a second.
You're mixing sports,
but it's all baseball-ish. Mm-hmm. So hold on, I can't hear you, but I will show you the back of the shirt here, which says
Baddish 24.
Yeah, so that's there. Hold on, let me put my ears back in.
I don't know why you had to show me that. my goodness. Somebody texted in, fine to be a baseball fan and celebrate. I was trying to reminisce about the 72 Cubs by wearing a cap. I put on my Carhartt cap once. My hate for these sham players won against the... What? I don't know. This text degenerated quickly. Let's see.
He tried to do what?
No joy watching them the last 2 weeks. I realized that I'm not a Cubs fan. All right. Well, then listen. I've been watching little bits of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, because I was out of the country, so I didn't get to see a lot of the games. But it's fun. But I'm not. Listen, I'm not that guy who's all of a sudden going to start wearing a Cubs hat and all of that. But I'm still going to wish them well. Because even though I'm a Sox fan, I did grow up watching the Cubs because they would preempt Bozo.
Oh, for the afternoon game.
Of course. So when I was a kid, they were on. And the Sox were on Channel 44, so you couldn't really get too many Sox games.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk. But you know what? One guy who is finally seeing all his years of frustration pay off, Rick Kempfer will be here. He is the creator of JustOneBadCentury.com. He's going to join us to talk Cubs on the other side of the news, which we will have in just a moment here on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Roger's already giving Cleveland weather forecasts for Tuesday and Wednesday. Very nice. Are you going to give Cleveland traffic, too, for people who are driving into Cleveland?
Well, I think I will from the airport.
Fantastic.
Because most of them probably maybe flying.
Oh, I know. I'd road trip it.
You'd road trip
Winnebago.
It?
Yeah, because you're not going to have to pay for a hotel then.
I'll get the
Volkswagen van.
Yeah,
me and a bunch of pals just sleeping. It has been a long time, needless to say, since the Cubs have been in the World Series, 71 years, 108 years since they've won the World Series. And one man who has been chronicling it all, not for the whole 108 years because he's not quite that old, but he's been doing it. He's the founder of JustOneBadCentury.com. Rick Kempfer is here. Rick is an author. You may know Rick from his radio career. He's done it all, and through it all, you have been a long-suffering Cubs fan. So you must be very happy today.
I am very happy, I have to say.
Now, were you getting a lot of congratulatory texts and emails from people who knew how long you've been waiting for this?
I guess I'm a little public about my Cubs love because when I got home last night, there were 137 text messages waiting for me. So that was nice. It was nice that people thought of me.
That's very nice. So for people who haven't seen it, tell us about Just One Bad Century.
So Just One Bad Century is a website dedicated to Cubs history. That I founded it back in 2008. With the goal of trying to figure out how we could possibly go 100 years without a World Series. So, I discovered that there were no curses
Okay.
I discovered that there were lots and lots of bad management decisions and bad players, and it really was no more than that. Bad owners.
Just an organization that was run poorly.
It was an organization that wasn't trying to win World Series.
Right.
So therefore they didn't. That's funny how that works.
It is. And now, you know, 5 years ago, or was it 5 years, 6 years ago, Theo Epstein comes on board and they lay out this plan. Yeah. And people are like, oh, I don't know. And then you sit through a couple seasons where, boy, the plan, you know, you had to really buy in. Now, did you buy in from the beginning?
I did. I bought in right away because that was the one thing I discovered was that nobody had ever done this. Nobody in Cubs history had ever said, you know what, let's take some time and do it right. You know, they had the lowest number of minor league teams.
Right.
When everyone started getting minor league teams, the Cubs had the fewest. They had the fewest number of minor league instructors when everyone was adding minor league instructors. They were the last ones aboard. And each step of the way, they were the last ones to have lights. You know, each step
of the way,
they caused their own problems.
And what brought that on? Was it just ownership was cheap? Was in all the research you've done for the website, where did things go bad after the last World Series win?
Well, it was the Wrigley family. I hate to say it. You know, that when they after the World War II, Philip Wrigley, P.K. Wrigley, the owner at that time, he inherited the team from his father, and with a vow that he never sell the club as long as he lived. But he didn't care about baseball at all. So, you know,
that's a nice way to own a team.
Yeah, he was a gum magnate. You know, he cared about gum. And he wanted the field to look nice, and so he spent money on, you know, beautifying the friendly confines.
Right.
And he did a great job at that and drew fans and what have you, but he never worked on the field product.
So now, as you look to this, last night, you know, the Cubs win the pennant. Now this week they go to Cleveland, and four more wins, this could all be over. How does that change the website? Or does it?
Well, it's still just one
bad
century.
It was a bad century,
So it doesn't. And, you know, the thing about the website that is interesting is every single Cubs player in history is featured on there. So if you want to, and they're all in alphabetical order, if you want to find out about any player that ever played for the Cubs, it's all there.
Well, yeah, it is a, if you think you're a Cubs, an all-knowing Cubs fan, go there and check and you'll see. And if you don't know anything about the Cubs and want to know the history, because, you know, yes, you may know this team and you may be all caught up in the moment, but if you want to know why and how they got to this point, then you got to go check out the website.
I think that's a good plan.
Well, listen, I like to have a plan, Rick. You know that. I don't want to just go into things half-cocked and not know what's going on. But all right. This is something that I heard a lot last night and over the last couple of days. And I think it's a baseball thing, but it seemed to really resonate with me as I was watching people talk about their reaction to the Cubs winning the pennant and now going to the World Series. And it was about generations and families and how, you know, I wish I could share this with, you name any relative, my dad, my grandmother, my grandfather brought me to my first game, blah, blah, blah. And it went on and on and on and on. Does that seem from, like, more intense with Cubs fans just because you've suffered for so long? Or is this a baseball thing in general, you think?
Well, did you feel that way when the Sox won it?
I did, but see, I didn't come from a sports family, so it was, my dad took us to some games, but there wasn't that passion around the house. We just, my brothers and I kind of came upon that stuff by ourselves, and our fandom grew that way. There was no, it wasn't like I hear some people saying, oh, I watched the games with my grandfather and blah, 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 blah. We never watched game. We watched roller derby with my grandfather, but that was about it.
Well, you know, my father was from Germany, so he didn't care about baseball at all.
He wanted football.
Yeah, exactly. But my Uncle Manny grew up on Lakewood, you know, near the ballpark, and he used to go there after school every day in the 50s when they were really bad.
Yeah.
That was the worst decade ever.
Okay. What made it so bad?
They didn't have a single winning season the entire decade.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, he would go then and they'd have like 2,000, 3,000 fans and they'd go out in the bleachers and the kids, it was like part of, you know, a school ritual.
Yeah.
He went to Lane Tech High School and they'd go over there.
Now, was that when they would pay them to flip the seats up and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So he really had a love of the Cubs and he took me to my first game in 1968 and I've been a fan ever since.
Yeah.
He passed away a couple of years ago, and so, like you were mentioning, the first thing I thought of when they won when they won the game last night was about my Uncle Manny, who's not here anymore. But I think every Cub fan was feeling that way.
Yeah, it seems that way. And I'll be honest, it was emotional watching some of these people tell these stories, or even reading people who would post on Facebook or other places just saying, boy, this is so exciting. I wish so-and-so could be here with me.
And I think it's, you know, the whole baseball thing is a, you know, not to be sexist, but it is a father-son thing, you know, where my son and I are both diehard Cub fans. And it's something that we can bond on together without causing any strife. You know, you're rooting for the same team. You're talking about double plays. You're not having to discuss the terrible traumas out there in the world.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's 3 hours where you can agree on something.
Yeah, you sit out in the sun, you have a hot dog, and you just chat.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Now, you have three sons. Are they all Cubs fans, or have some of them strayed to other markets?
Well, they're all Cub fans, but the oldest two really don't care about baseball.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
That must have broke your heart.
I think I might have pushed too hard. I think I might have pushed too hard on the first two. The third one, I didn't push that hard, and he came to it on his own. So,
really?
Yeah.
Well, very good. And he's sporting his Cubs jersey tonight, and Sean's all ready to go. Now, you had tickets for tonight's game.
I did.
I have to ask, because I would imagine the answer is you're happy they won it last night. You didn't care.
Right.
But would you have rather they, you know?
No, my thinking on it, first of all, I'm happy we won.
Yes.
And that's all that matters. And I had it in my back pocket that if we didn't win, I would get to see a game. So either way, it was a very stress-free way of watching that game last night.
So no worries either way.
No worries.
Now, there's people who are talking about going to Cleveland, and we've been hearing reports on the price of the tickets.
Yeah.
And Wrigley's tickets are going to be more expensive. So as a guy who had tickets to today's game, which didn't happen.
Yeah.
Let me posit this hypothetical to a guy who's been a Cubs fan his whole life. You have tickets to games 3, 4, or 5. You know what you could sell them for. You might be able to pay for a year of your young son's college.
Yeah.
Do you sell the tickets, or do you go to the game?
I would sell the tickets, and I'll tell you why.
Yes.
Now, first of all, I have two in college right now. That's the first thing. And my buddy that I share the season tickets with, he has World Series tickets. He sold two tickets for $27,000.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a pretty easy thing.
Yeah.
Then you buy, you know, lousy seats for $1,500 or something, and you still get to see the game, but then you can help pay for your college.
Jeez. We got to take a real quick break because there is a radio legend on the line, and I hate to make him wait, but I don't want to have to cut him short. You will recognize. It's almost like we're going to play "This Is Your Life."
Okay, great.
And we'll do that momentarily. So please hold on, special caller. We'll do that in just a second here on WGN. Rick Kempfer is my guest. JustOneBadCentury.com is the website. Go there, learn all about Cubs history. It's Brian Noonan. We are talking Cubs, of course, with Rick Kempfer. He is the founder of JustOneBadCentury.com, a wonderful resource for all Cubs history. 312-981-7200 is our number, and I said before the break that a radio legend is on the line, and this is, I got to be honest, this is very exciting for me to welcome John Records Landecker to the program. Records truly is his middle name. John, it is good to talk to you, and it is an honor to talk to you. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm calling in because Rick was my producer for 10 years, and
Good?
Oh, yeah, he was not half bad. He wasn't half bad. He was pretty good, actually, yeah.
Wow, look at that. Not half bad, really.
You got that on tape?
Yeah, okay. Got that on tape. I totally recommend it.
Yeah, thank you.
And I know how deeply he loves the Cubs, and I know that he's passed it on to his sons. And so when things started going the Cubs' way, Rick is one of those people that I thought of. And there was a moment in our career when my ratings were horrible. I was doing mornings, and Rick was the producer. And management at the radio station issued new edicts that we were not allowed to talk, we were not allowed to have guests, we weren't allowed to do this.
Wow.
So basically Rick's job that day was to do nothing. So he decided, because of this, to go to a Cubs game. And Rick, what happened at that Cubs game?
Well, I can tell you the date, John. It was May 6th, 1998.
Yep.
And it was the day that Kerry Wood struck out 20 batters.
Really?
And I just went because, as John mentioned, I had a bad day at work.
Yeah.
And I took my two assistant producers, and the three of us went to the game and just got hammered, if I can say that on the radio. And
enjoyed I think you know that you can.
And enjoyed ourselves one of the most historic games in Wrigley Field history.
Just because of bad radio management, you lucked right. into one of the best Cubs games ever.
That's right.
Well, no. Look, come on now. Because of bad ratings.
Well.
Then comes bad management.
Okay.
Then comes the game.
So it all goes back to, John, I think
it's
you have to blame.
It's a wonderful life.
It is.
It's a wonderful life.
So what are you up to now?
Well, first of all, I am one of those people that ran out and bought a Cubs hat. But unlike maybe some others, I didn't do it when they were winning. I did it when they lost. When they lost two games back-to-back and hadn't scored a run in two games, I thought to myself, you know, I got a lot of friends that are Cubs fans. What's wrong with, like, being a new Cubs fan right now? You know, send a little positive vibe their way. What's the big deal?
Nothing wrong with that.
So I went out and bought the hat, put it on, took a picture, put it on Facebook, and I said, I just bought the lucky hat. Everybody can relax now.
So you're taking full credit for this, then?
No. I'm just
partial credit, it sounds like.
No. Just say
I just have to say that while John and I worked together, John was merciless in mocking me for loving the Cubs. He was merciless.
Yeah,
well-intentioned and well-advised to mock you for that.
Yeah. No, I was, because it was, you know.
Too easy.
I was a no-brainer, you know. There's a ESPN documentary film, whatever you want to call it, called Catching Hell, which is pretty much about Bartman, but it also goes back to everything else. And I got to say that during the game, when that one foul ball went down the third base side, sort of into Bartman territory,
yeah,
I was like screaming at the TV, "Get back! Get back!" Because because it was just. It was too familiar.
Yeah, you don't. And they were making that storyline on Fox Sports One. That was going to be. They were going to beat that Bartman and the Goat storylines to death, no matter what was going on. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Joe Buck and that Dodgers pitcher were married today.
Is that right? Clayton Kershaw said yes.
Yes.
Thank goodness.
He proposed, and I'm pleased to report that they have now joined in a. Very harmonious union.
Well, their courtship was a long and public one, so I'm glad they finally put it to rest. This
Man,
is wonderful.
That guy is, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it went from like, this guy can throw 140 pitches, no problem, to, oh, you know, he was injured during the season and it's difficult to come back. I'm like, I can't believe I'm
here. It was audio French kissing.
Yes. Well, I think Joe was getting jewelry from Clayton. I think there were some deliveries in little blue boxes, and everybody was happy. So
but
now it's the love fest is over.
But there are sports events that transcend being sports events, and this is
anything that can make a John Landecker put on a Cubs hat is okay by me.
Yeah. See, even I won't go that far, John. I'll wish them well, but I will not put on the garb.
Why not?
I don't know. I'm a Sox fan.
Okay, is it going to hurt you for a week or two?
No, but see, here's the thing. I've been very public about my Sox fandom, and I don't need people giving me a hard time that I'm a bandwagon jumper.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll get off because I don't want to hog time here, but the one thing, there was another thing that got me to get the hat.
Yeah.
And that was that guy who claims to be a Sox fan, who went out and got a Bartman Cubs jersey made, put it on, and wore it to a Bulls game.
Yeah,
and I saw that, and I went, that is going just a little too far.
Frank Kaminsky is the name of the guy. He was a University of Wisconsin basketball player, Southside guy.
And, you got too much time on your hand. John, listen, it was a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for teeing up Rick a little bit. We appreciate that.
Hey, Rick, check your phone messages when you get home. Thanks for having me on. I'll hang up and listen for your answer.
Thanks, John. Bye. Take care. What's John's book called?
Records Truly Is My Middle Name, which is available via EckhartsPress.com.
Which is where your books are available,
that's
EckhartsPress.com.
Right.
Go to JustOneBadCentury.com. Hopefully this ends it. The website will be there because there will always be Cubs history. And it was a bad century, but hopefully that all ends this week.
That sounds semi-sincere.
It is sincere. Well, I have no skin in the game. It's okay. I root against the Cubs when they play the Sox.
Okay.
Other than that, I have no issues. So good luck to you.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you for coming in tonight. Everybody needs to go to justaonebadcentury.com and learn all about the Cubs. Not just, there was a lot of Cubs lore before this team, and this team is fine, but a lot of things happened before we got to this point.
10 different World Series appearances before this.
Is that right?
So you can read all about them.
Read all about them. And what jersey is this one? What
year is this? This is the 1916 Cubs, which is the year they started playing at Wrigley Field.
It almost looks like the Cincinnati Bearcats.
It's actually, it does kind of look like a rat or something. It's a really badly drawn bear.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, they spruced up the logos.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Well, thanks for coming in. It was great seeing you.
Thanks.
And Sean, good luck. I hope hope things go well. Keep your dad in line this week. I'm sure he's going to be all out of his mind. All right, let's do this, and it's news time on WGN. That was very exciting to talk to John Landau.
I know.
Right?
I know.
I grew up listening to John Records Landecker on the legendary WLS back when they played music. You didn't even know WLS used to play music, did you, Cody? They were like the big,
It was a big battle, LS and CFL.
That's right, Super CFL.
Yeah.
Let's get it right.
Is that like the NFL? But
no, this was Top 40 radio, Top 40 AM radio.
That's right.
When AM radio played music.
Whoa.
Yeah, and we dug it.
Why would that be a thing? Wasn't that low quality?
No. There was a thing. It was all there was. And then FM came along, but they played, FM played album rock.
This was back in the 60s, Cody.
Yeah. Dude, I know. 60s
in the mid-70s about.
I did not learn that this happened in my broadcast history classes.
Well, you should have, because as Roger said, the legendary wars between WLS and Super CFL and LS, of course, had Larry Lujack, John Records Landecker, Bob Surratt, legendary broadcasters. And it was, I grew up listening to those guys. It was always, it was cool. I mean, they were able to do a music show, but with a lot of personality.
And they had bits on there.
Yes.
That they would do. Landecker had the Boogie Check.
Boogie Check was hilarious. Crazy. And he was on at night.
Yeah.
And so, LS at night, he was heard all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
His Clear Channel.
That's
so
right.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal.
You should get his book. It is fantastic. It really is.
His records truly is his middle name.
That's right.
That's right.
And I think you might remember this, if I jog your memory, I actually performed on stage with John Landecker. It was about a year and a half ago in our old-time radio group.
Old-timey radio group.
Yeah. He online, on Facebook, was looking, was doing some research about the Lone Ranger. He loves the Lone Ranger.
Who doesn't?
And I connected with him and got him involved in the group. Yep. And he actually was the Lone Ranger to my Tonto, as we did a performance of one of the old radio Lone Ranger shows.
Somebody texted in, "Don't forget Dick Biondi." We do not forget Dick Biondi.
The Wild Italian.
No way we could forget Dick Biondi, who's still on the air.
Still,
Dick Biondi, he's got to be 117
at least,
and he's still on the air because he used to do sock hops.
That's
back in the '50s.
Mm-hmm.
Playing records at sock hops. Yes, Cody's eyes are wide. Like, what black hole have you fallen into? What time travel wormhole are you talking about? If you're in radio, you need to know some of this. Especially if you're in Chicago radio, you need to know some of this.
I know some of this. I know Dick Biondi's name. I know stuff. I know Bob Surratt.
Sure, you know Bob Surratt. He worked here for a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but Bob was a big-time music DJ back in the day. Very
popular. And they influenced the DJs on LS and CFL influenced so many radio personalities around the country because, again, they were 50,000-watt, just like WGN, 50,000-watt Clear Channel. They cover basically the entire country and parts of Canada. So
38 states and Canada is how what the tagline used to be.
Yeah.
38 states and Canada. I still use all the outdated jargon.
Why not?
Because
it lives on through you.
Sure, you listen on a crystal set to this program. That's the best way to hear me. Pretend it's old-timey radio. Right. Everybody's sitting on the carpet around a big box staring at it. Staring at a radio. No pictures, just a radio.
Listen,
in the 30s, waiting for me to read the funny papers, like Mayor LaGuardia from New York.
Kind of flicking the cat's whiskers.
Sure.
On the crystal set, trying to get a little better reception. And everyone sharing one headset.
Wow.
They would have it plugged in and have like three different earphones, one side, attached to it so everyone could hear it because couldn't afford a speaker on it. Those were the early days.
Easy Edison.
I'll even say that
you're going way back. You're going Marconi.
You're going way back.
You're going to the first. Come in here. I need you.
That was my pilgrimage over the summer. Site. Remember, out on the East Coast.
All right.
That was a fun time for me.
What were you going to say, Cody?
I've worked with reel to reel machines. I have.
All right.
In my first job, it was at the classical station in town.
Yeah.
And all their Studs Terkel stuff is on reel to reel.
That's right.
Well, sure.
So yeah. I know.
Right, I know. It's just your eyes got very big. What happened here?
There's a lot of Chicago radio history that definitely happened before I even lived in Chicago or, you know, whatever.
But, well, and I'm kind of a radio dork because I listen to all these, you know, all these guys forever.
Yeah, I think for a millennial, I'm doing all right. Some of these kids don't know what a mini disc is.
No,
mini discs were the best thing to happen to radio.
I loved mini discs. I loved them.
Mini discs work better on our show on the overnight than the computers do now.
I loved having mini discs on the old show.
Mm-hmm.
We would have stacks of them, and they'd have all our things. Everything we needed was on mini disc. Now it's gone. The technology's gone. Now it's all hyperlink drive. Whatever.
The cloud.
Everything's in the cloud. I'm in the clouds. I fly above the clouds. I don't know. From the 406, we could listen to WLS After Dark in northern Wisconsin. Yeah, they went everywhere. Somebody from the 708, thank you for the memories. Listen to them in the 70s going to Shaver Lake in Indiana. And that was the only radio station you could get was WLS.
Yeah.
That was before they got out of right-wing crazy political nutbags. Anyway. Yes, and suddenly he breaks bad. Oh, you know why I'm jet-lagged? Did I mention I'm jet-lagged? I'm very jet-lagged.
I was wondering when you'd get to that.
We're going to get to some stories. Because Cody came in with ideas tonight. This was insanity.
Amazing.
I know. I thought maybe it was because I was still, you know, getting over the flight.
Right.
And the time differences and all this. But Cody came in and he said, well, because we knew we were going to talk about my trip to Spain because it was my first time in Europe, so it was very exciting. And we are going to be talking about it also on the podcast. We have some other things because Cody has an anecdote. So we'll get to all that on the podcast. As you know, the podcast starts on Facebook Live and then we go to Internet only, Facebook is Internet only. But then we go to WGNradio.com. Would that be right?
Audio only.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
On the
Facebook
first
Live, ones. You can see pictures.
Yeah.
Oh man, you can
Live.
See pictures. You can see bags under my eyes. It's crazy. But I want to talk to you too if you have traveled overseas because I'm wondering if you felt a change. You know, did it change your life? Did it change your perspective when you went overseas and you were exposed to other cultures? Did you appreciate America more? Did you see some of our foibles exaggerated a little bit through the eyes of people from other lands? And what did you learn from traveling overseas? I got to be honest. It was a very short and accelerated trip, but it was worth every second of it. So that's the overview. We'll get into a lot more. But if you want to jump in with any thoughts, 312-981-7200. That is always the way to get to us here on WGN. Roger mentioned this in the news. But legendary broadcaster Herb Kent, the cool gent, passed away today. He's 88 years old. He was on local airwaves for more than 70 years. Yeah. And Herb Kent, the cool gent, died today after his show. He did his show
yesterday morning.
His show, and then he passed away today.
Yeah.
And you went to high school with Herb Kent?
No, I didn't go to high school.
No.
You're not 88. I listened.
You listened to him.
Because it was...
the King of the Dust.
LS, and then his station, and then CFL.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the three of them together, and I would switch back and forth. And so I was always listening, because they actually played music that LS and CFL wouldn't play.
Right.
And I loved listening to them. It was just more laid back, even though
because he's the cool gent.
Well, I know. Yeah. He also has an autobiography out that is just fantastic. The stories from when he first got into business and then back in the 60s in the heyday of R&B radio.
Yeah.
just what he went through. Just what an amazing life and an amazing career.
Yeah, and that's 70 years, a long time.
Yeah.
So another legend lost today, in especially a fixture here in Chicago. So
yeah.
Herb Kent, RIP, the cool gent, has exited the building.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into this, because we're talking about international travel and some people want to jump in. This was my first time going overseas, and it was amazing, amazing. Dave's been hanging on. He's in Elk Grove. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm well. What's going on?
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. I was in the Navy back in the middle 80s, early to middle 80s, and you know, of course you get a chance to, you know, travel to different countries. It was a great experience, but the one thing that kind of stuck out in my mind was that we had traveled to Pakistan, and you don't appreciate until you get a chance to travel abroad, especially if it's you know, going to a third world country. But the ship itself, it had the local air inside of it, and I would say that it was pretty foul. It took the ventilation ship. The ship's ventilation probably about 2 weeks to clear all of the air out of it, and it was a noticeable and memorable experience. But I was just going to say though, all you have to do and I know people say that a lot, if you're really anti U.S., we don't do enough for anybody, things like that. All you got to do is travel abroad, and then come home, and I think you will appreciate our country that much more.
Oh, I agree, Dave. I agree. Thank you for the call. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I liked Spain a lot, but I liked coming back because everything's bigger here. But the world is not a big place. The world is very small because, as I'm going through Madrid, and this is just one of one of the things I noticed, there's everything in Madrid, and granted it's a big city, that you have here. There were Starbucks. Actually, to get on one of the buses, the woman at the front desk of our hotel used Starbucks as a landmark. So there's Starbucks everywhere, McDonald's, Burger King. There was a Five Guys being built on the main drag in Madrid, on the Gran Via. They're building a Five Guys. So you see that, you know, the global economy, you can, if you wanted to do that, you could go and not feel like you were really outside of this country to a certain extent. But then I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to go to McDonald's or, you know, any of that while I'm overseas. I don't do that when I'm in this country going on vacation. I don't go to a chain if I go visit another city, you know. I want to eat local. So that's what we did over there. Michael is in Riverside. Hi, Michael. You're on WGN.
Hi. Yeah, I was just driving. Heard you guys talking about it. When I was about 15, my uncle took me on a trip to England and Ireland, and I enjoyed it, realizing there's a whole world outside of my kind of, you know, Chicagoland existence. And then when I got to college at Northwestern, I was a history major, and my advisor suggested I step outside my comfort zone, and I ended up studying abroad in Kenya.
Oh, wow.
In East Africa for a semester. And at first, you know, there's culture shock in the first week. You notice everything that you don't like the poverty,
right,
the crowded masses of people. But then you start noticing all the good differences. Like, you know, we were 20 years old, and Kenya was a little bit lawless. We could kind of do whatever we wanted pretty much at night. And anyway, I met wonderful people. I was actually there. Mombasa is actually a predominantly Islamic town. I was there when September 11th happened back here in the States.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. That was my first reaction. But people were actually like, I made a lot of Kenyan Muslim friends, but they were like, you know, we're sorry for what happened, you know, happened to your country. You know, not all of us are like that. You know, we're good people. And I never really felt threatened or anything. In fact, I had such a good experience in Kenya that I ended up signing up for the Peace Corps, and I taught English for 2 years in Mozambique.
Oh,
and
wow.
Kind of like your previous caller was saying, you do come back and appreciate some things, like life here is comfortable, obviously.
Yeah. For most of us, yeah.
Right, yeah, sure. For, you know, a white guy in Chicago, it's fine. But, you know, there's no deprivation. But, you know, over there, you got used to living with a lot less. Mm-hmm. And when I came back from Africa, both after Kenya and then after Mozambique, I was kind of, it took a while to adjust. I was kind of angry at all the sort of like excess and materialism,
right,
and consumerism that I saw everywhere. So that was a radical change in perspective in my life as a result of the international travel I took advantage of.
Now, is that change that has lasted? Did you find yourself cutting back, or did you immediately fall back into the old habits?
Oh, it took a while. I realized you can't be angry at society, at, you know, America for not having the experience you had. That's just not a healthy way to live.
Right.
So I internalized a lot of it, but I also, you know, caught up with my Peace Corps friends who are returned to the States and shared kind of, you know, not war stories, Peace Corps stories. And that helped. But I think now that I teach, my students love to hear, I teach history, anytime I relate something to an experience I had in either Mozambique or Kenya or South Africa or something like that. So, and I encourage students to study abroad. I think it's absolutely one of the best things you can do if you can while you're in college. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Michael, thanks for the call. I'm noticing that with my daughter as I was talking to her over the last week and you know, while she's been there. She's really taken full advantage of this study abroad stuff where this was the only weekend she was staying in Madrid, because every other weekend she's been going somewhere else. And I think that's great. That's what you do it for. And now, is it wrong for me to say I'm very jealous of that lifestyle? I wish when I was 20, I had the opportunity to go over to Europe and just knock around. Well, she's taking classes. But, you know, then every weekend she's zipping off to some other land, other country.
David did the same thing when he went to Italy to study for a semester.
Yeah.
And that's when we went overseas, right, to visit him. And every weekend he would go south to the islands, or
Blue Island, Stony Island,
yeah, right,
those islands,
or he would take the train up through the Alps and go to some
Von Trapp's house,
northern European countries. He just went all over the place, and an experience I would never be able to afford.
Right.
And we could barely afford that, but would have the time or inclination at our older age now, especially, you know, as health starts, yeah, changing as you get older, you know.
We'll talk a little bit more about this. I'll share some stories because people have been wondering, so we'll do some of that. And I have, for the podcast, I have a whole list, and you see I have it written down, what I learned on my big journey to Spain. So we'll get to all of that after the news on WGN. Cody, you mentioned this happened while you were in Spain as well, because we've both been to, that's one thing about this program, we've both been to Spain, Cody and myself. Roger's been to Italy, so we'll count that as being close to Spain.
Have you been to Spain?
And you've never taken singing lessons
that's
either,
right,
but that's all right.
Yeah, no, I've never got there.
It is it's a wonderful place, but this was odd, because while you were there, Cody, you missed out on your boy Bernie and all the Bernie Sanders hubbub when he was leaving.
Correct? I missed the DNC.
The big.
I wouldn't say I missed it. I wasn't here for it.
Wasn't here for it.
I didn't have to deal with it.
And I was not here for the third presidential debate. And this was a strange thing, because I don't speak Spanish. And I got a little bit of news from the internet at night, because, you know, I wasn't paying for all kinds of phone stuff. So I had Wi-Fi at the hotel, and when I'd get back to the room, I'd do some stuff. But it seemed it was strange and kind of nice to be removed from all of that for a while. I would get up in the morning, and the hotel had breakfast, so we would go down to eat breakfast, and they had on, I guess, Madrid's or Spain's answer to Good Morning America. It was a morning show, similar to the morning shows here, except they had a very attractive woman doing sports. I forget the word for sport, but anyway, she was doing sports. They had an older gentleman who was, I'm guessing, the news anchor, sitting at a desk next to a very attractive younger woman who was another news anchor, whose body language led me to believe that she didn't like sitting next to the older gentleman on the news set. Then they had a young anchor, and he kind of sat at his own desk and spoke, and they all, you know, they were all speaking Spanish. I tried to, the only thing I kind of understood throughout the broadcast was the weather, because they had a radar, and so I knew where Madrid was on the Spanish map, and so when the clouds and things would go over, I would go, oh, look, it's going to rain today in Madrid, and my wife would say, how do you know? I go, well, I can, the pictures, I don't know, she, you don't know what they're saying. I said, no, but I saw the cloud come right across where Madrid was, and so, you know, that's pretty much it. But I enjoyed kind of, and it was only for a few days, but being cut off from all this. But there was a lot of news footage on Spanish television of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I could not understand any of what they said about them. But you would hear, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. And I go, oh. But people seemed, people are curious. They wonder what's going on here with our political process. They wonder about this election. And they wonder how Donald Trump got this far and what that would mean. And people, people in Europe are a little nervous about the possibility of a Donald Trump presidency. That's all I'll say. That was the impression I got from some of the people I spoke to. Because a lot of people did speak English, which was very exciting. Everything is very small there. Did you find that in Italy too, Roger? That everything was smaller, like the toilets and everything.
Yeah, I found the water closets.
I'll say bathroom because I'm an American.
There you go.
Bathroom.
Very small. In fact, some of them were two different rooms.
They just have the
one facilities room was extremely small.
Everything was small. The structures themselves, the cisternas,
mm-hmm.
was very, very small.
And the many of the roads, very narrow. When you go to a restaurant, you always thought tables were a little too close in American restaurants, way too close over in Italy.
I noticed this, that Europeans don't have the same body space bubble that we do in America.
Exactly.
I like people to back off me.
Mm-hmm.
And in Europe, they don't, and it seemed very, everywhere seemed crowded.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because the streets are narrower. Well, that's probably part of it. The streets are much narrower, mm-hmm. and so there's a lot of people in a narrower. So everything seemed really crowded, and people are right on top of you.
And here's the other thing about in Italy, at least where we were, there were some larger. The boulevards were larger.
Yeah.
But the side streets, they were so narrow, people parked on the sidewalk.
Oh.
So you couldn't walk on the sidewalk. You'd have to sometimes, because the cars were so close together, mm-hmm. you would have to climb over the bumpers to get to a doorway or to a business or something.
Yeah.
It was really that crowded over there.
Yeah, everywhere I walked, we went to this store. My daughter wanted to take my wife to the store, Primark. It's like a five-level department store, but it's got prices like Target. You know,
mm-hmm.
clothes for, you get a sweater for like 10 euro and things like that. But it's a five level thing. And so it was, I think it was Tuesday night, whatever night it was. Everything blended together. Cause this was a fast turnaround. We got delayed 5 hours on Sunday leaving, which when you're only going somewhere for a short amount of time, 5 hours is a big chunk.
Especially
I could have done a lot of
flight.
Stuff. Yeah. Long flight.
Yeah.
But we're going, so. It was a night, and I don't know, I was tired, but we went to this store, and it was, I've never, except for like Black Friday or Christmas Eve, I have never been in a store that's been that crowded. That's all I could compare it to. And every level was crowded. And of course, everyone is speaking Spanish, and I don't, you know, I no comprende,
mm-hmm.
but I also didn't like, everybody's on top of you. So, there's piles and piles of discount clothing and a million Spaniards and me, and I'm tired and I need to sit down, but there's nowhere to sit because nobody there sits. They're always on the move. The only time they sit is when they're drinking vino tinto, red wine, which, you know, I enjoyed that quite a bit. But so we're in the store and I flip out. But let's go back to the flight. Cause we get to the airport. Well, I'll start at the beginning. We'll get to a little of it now and we'll get to more of it on the podcast. We get to the airport, and I made a crucial error, a travel error. I did not call the airport before, and usually you only hear that when there's severe weather. Call the airport, make sure your flight's leaving on time. Last Sunday it was sunny. I thought, well, this will be should be no problem to jet off to España. We get to the airport 3 hours ahead of time, like you're supposed to do for international flights. Because I have to make sure I don't have, I don't know, butter or whatever I'm supposed to be carrying that I'm not supposed to take to another land. Do you have insects or butter? Yeah, I'm completely covered in butter, and that attracted flies. So, yes, I'm a horrible traveler. We get there, and as we get to the gate, they say, or get to the desk, oh, your plane has been delayed 5 hours. Well, yikes. 4 hours, but in reality, it turned out it was 5 hours that we were delayed. So, like, oh, now, in order to make it right with us, Iberia Airlines gave us each a $15 voucher for a restaurant. You know, you could use it for food in the terminal. Which, okay, that's very nice. I'll say that, very nice. But you take $15 and divide it by 4 hours, you're making way less than minimum wage. You know? So,
especially airport prices.
Yes, airport food is not cheap.
No.
Even if you go to, what would normally be an inexpensive place out on the street, in the airport it's not. But the other thing about the airport is you realize that things you would never pay for on the street because you'd think they were overpriced, suddenly they seem reasonable in the airport. You know? Like I bought some Garrett's caramel corn.
Yeah.
Nah, tasty, fine product, expensive out here.
Right.
In the airport, it's like, well, I don't know. I could take out a student loan, or I could have some popcorn. Well, let's see. And then my wife's like, well, we're stuck here. We might as well, all right, we'll get some caramel corn. You know, so, but the flight, I didn't realize that airlines still serve food.
It's a long flight.
It's a horribly long flight, 8 hours. But it was, so you get on and, oh, they're very nice on the, the flight pixies, the sky waitresses, whatever you call them. They're very polite on there, and they're wearing uniforms. They look very snazzy, and they, so yeah, you get a little hot dinner, and I don't know what it was. They called it chicken, who knows? A little tin tray and some stuff, and then right about an hour and a half before you landed, we got a light breakfast, which was a ham sandwich. And you know how I feel about ham. Yeah, I'm not a fan. However, we'll get into this. Something about international ham piqued my interest. I am dead set against American ham. I'm sorry, American ham makers and all you folks that who are farmers. I love the rest of the pig in America, but something about American ham I don't cotton to.
A little more on the prosciutto type of ham?
Yes, that's the key.
There you go.
International ham, which is my new radio name. International ham. That's what I do my public broadcasting. Yes, international ham. It is, oh, my goodness. I couldn't get enough. Couldn't get enough international ham. I was eating cured meats. I'm retaining so much fluid, I look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. There is not an appendage of my body that is not, where fluid is not pushing the skin out in ridiculous ways. It's like I have sausage fingers and big, my leg looks like one of the Iberico ham legs that I saw hanging throughout everywhere in Spain.
The meat markets, right?
Yes, everywhere in Spain there was just, what did the $15 buy me? Nothing. We sat down at a place that we wanted to try out here in the real world, and they had a branch of it in the airport because we have a gift certificate for it. Well, we'll go and use the gift certificate out here, but in the airport we were stuck. And the $15, I think, bought me most of my sandwich.
Okay.
I don't think it paid for all of the sandwich, and it definitely didn't pay for the beer that went along with the sandwich. Because, you know, when you got a five-hour delay, you might as well have a couple cocktails. And then realize after a couple beers, oh, no, now I'm going to have to go to the bathroom a bazillion times.
But you may be able to just sleep on the plane.
Well,
you know, you'll be relaxed.
Sure, but I'm an old man, and my, you know, my system is not up to par. I did figure out, though, too, because I never use the lavatory on a plane. Never. Because domestic flights are small.
Yeah,
the planes are small. Usually. And so the bathrooms are shorter and more angled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thankfully, on long-haul flights, as they called this one, the planes are much larger. And so the bathrooms, I can actually stand up straight. So it made using the lavatory on the bathroom much, much easier. because, you know.
Well, that was a good thing for you then, yeah.
Well, it was a very good thing for me. Yeah. All right, let's do this, and then we'll do something else. And we'll tell a few more stories, and then we'll get ready for Karen Conti, and we'll get ready for all of your legal questions to be answered. And we have many legal stories to get to, too. So a lot coming up on WGN. After 9 o'clock, we'll be going live on Facebook to begin our internet-only web-exclusive podcast. Those mean the same thing, internet-only and web-exclusive, but I wanted to make sure you knew exactly where they were going to be. We'll start on Facebook, and then you can hear the rest at WGNradio.com, so we'll do that. We didn't have a podcast last week because I was not here, and Cody was not here. You were off last week as well.
I was.
Isn't that nice?
I missed you so much. I couldn't bear to come into the station.
You lie like a rug. So we'll talk more about Spain during the podcast, because lots of stories, lots of things happened. And, you know, it was me in another country trying not to be a jerk, which is always, I have a hard enough time not being a jerk in this country. So trying not to be a jerk in another country, that was tough. And I think overall, I'll tease it, overall I did well. I didn't become a jerk till I actually got back in this country. So, and that wasn't my fault.
Did you notice other Americans?
No, I didn't.
Huh.
I noticed a lot of Europeans because the men wear bags, like purses, like man bags.
Oh, yes.
A lot of man bags, and a lot of, there were some fanny packs making a comeback in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed that. I didn't notice many Americans. I did have one run in with three old American ladies, and they didn't quite get me, and they got very offended.
What does that mean?
Well, we were about to board a bus, one of these hop-on, hop-off tour buses kind of deals, and we had a rough time with the buses up to that point, with that bus. We took a lot of public transportation. We were all over it.
Did you take the train?
Took the high-speed train, took the local train, took the metro, which is their subway.
Was the metro not amazing?
It was hot.
Really?
A bazillion degrees. You know how much I love public transportation here in America, which is none. It was just packed and a million degrees. But it was fine. It was easy to navigate. You know, we got to where we needed to be.
Hmm.
But it was very, very hot in there. And I don't know if it was because the weather is transitioning, and so they decided it was cold. Because everybody was wearing, it was like in the 60s, and people were wearing big, heavy coats. I was like, easy, Spaniards. It's not that chilly.
Huh.
I was wearing a short-sleeve shirt and a windbreaker.
Yeah, I mean, when I was there, it was 110 degrees.
That's hot. Yes.
But I found public transit to be delightful.
I found using it very easy and quick.
Sure.
That I would use it again without hesitation. It was just very warm.
Okay.
But that's my only complaint.
So what happened with the old ladies?
All right, so the old ladies, we're going to get on a bus. So the first bus comes, it's packed. And this has been the problem. These tour buses are coming, they're packed, so you can't get on. So there's three old ladies standing there, and they turn out to be American. Because I said to Debbie, I said, we're getting on this next bus come hell or high water. And these old ladies went, well, you're going to have to knock us over because we've been waiting, da-da-da-da-da, and you got some old ladies coming at you. And I said, listen, with all due respect, I've taken care of old ladies before. You don't scare me. And I thought it was a joke.
Wow.
But maybe my delivery came off as a little more threatening because they got very upset. And the bus came, and Debbie got on, and I stepped back to let the old ladies on. And they're like, no, you can go ahead. And I was like, no, don't be silly. Go on. Get on the bus. So I let them go on. I didn't, like, get out of the way, but I was joking with them. And they were, oh, man, they didn't want any of it. I was like, listen, that's your problem for not getting me, Granny. I was just trying to be funny.
You and your American imperialism.
She was American, and she threatened me first. I just wanted her to know that, listen, I may be in Spain, but I'll still take you out, Granny. You don't scare me. I'm not afraid.
Good.
I respect women and the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really respect elderly women. But I was joking. But again, I don't know. Sometimes my tone when I'm under stress does not come out. All right, so more fascinating tales during the podcast. Karen Conti on the other side of the news. Welcome back. How are you?
Oh,
good to see you.
It's been a while, I think.
Yeah it's because, we were off.
We're traveling fools.
Yeah, we're all jetting about. We're globetrotters. We don't have time to be here helping people out. I don't anyway.
No, that's right.
You always find a way to help people
out. There's time for the little people, Brian.
Wow. Wow. All right. Listen, that was Kay Conti at kconti.com.
If anybody knows me, they know I was kidding.
I don't know if the little people can even have computers to email you in their angry retorts. So you may have gotten away with that. The little people are not technologically savvy, are they?
No, and we don't pay taxes, right? What is that? Who said that? Leona Helmsley. Only little people pay taxes.
Well, I think a presidential candidate let us know that only little people pay taxes, too. But that's
I wasn't going there.
I know, but it's a whole other thing. All right, you've been overseas. Do you like when you're kind of isolated from the news and stuff for a couple days? Do you like that, or do you get antsy?
No, I really enjoy it, and but I also enjoy talking to people in different countries about what's going on with us.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting about what topics they want to choose about, about war, about politics, or about, some people are interested in the death penalty, or some people interested in sports. And it's interesting to see what they glean from the news
right.
that they get.
Yeah, and we are covered over in, I saw a lot of U.S. news being covered on Spanish TV, even though I had no idea what they were talking about. But
yeah.
Which was good, because I liked unplugging for a few days and not having, not feeling that I had to look at my phone and do all that.
I completely agree with you.
Sometimes you have to just get away.
That's right. And then come back and be surprised with the fact that El Chapo has escaped or something.
Yeah, all right. That's one of the stories you sent. And I don't understand this. I mean, I understand El Chapo. I understand that he escaped. I understand now there's some extradition problems. A judge has decided that he rejected five appeals that are intended to prevent the extradition. So they don't want him extradited to the United States. Is that what they're saying?
Well, that's right. And El Chapo was indicted here in Chicago.
Right.
And he's also wanted in many other states. And we don't know who's going to get him if he does get extradited. But the process of extradition is very complicated. It involves international treaties. It involves local things. If Mexican government doesn't think that he's going to be treated fairly in the United States because we have the death penalty, for instance, they may not choose to grant the extradition. But it appears by all accounts that El Chapo is losing the battle. And what was really interesting when I was looking at this story, and I don't know if you saw it because you were out of the country, but several days ago, the judge who's been presiding over this case was assassinated and it was caught on videotape. So this it's a horrific video.
Oh.
He's out jogging and some assassin jogs up behind him, puts a gun point blank to his head and kills him.
Jeez.
So I don't know if the message is coming from El Chapo that, hey, mess around with me and this is the treatment you're going to get. But I don't think it bodes well for this whole case coming to Chicago.
Wow.
I don't like this case coming to Chicago.
No, it's one of those things where everything that surrounds it could get very dangerous, as evidenced by this video.
These people are extremely powerful. I mean, in a way that we don't have people like this. I mean, the government can be bought, and the people around him are protecting him. In fact, there's all kinds of sightings that he's been out and about on, in Mexican restaurants.
Just on holiday?
And everyone knows that he gets out. He gets to go to a restaurant. Jeez. Everyone protects him. So we don't have, that's why he wants to stay in Mexico.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to deal with that. I mean, he'll be put, if he gets convicted, which he probably would be from all accounts, he'd be put into the Florence, Colorado prison, which is the
super
max that's underground. You have to break out into a medium security and then break into a maximum security. I mean, it would be impossible for him to ever get out.
So you mentioned that extradition is very complicated. We hear people, go to a non-extradition country. We hear about extradition. What kind of guidelines have to be met? Or does it vary from case to case and country to country?
Yeah, it varies from case to case. And it's basically the idea that Mexico wants to make sure that he is going to be treated fairly in the United States.
Okay.
And then there's issues of politics. And a lot of people are meeting with people and glad-handing and shaking hands. And deals are made. And, we don't know about the underground of that. But the idea might be, if you give us El Chapo and let us prosecute him, we'll give you this. And that goes on every single day. But it's very complicated. The biggest issue is, I said before, though, is the death penalty. Because when the death penalty is on the table, Mexico has a right to say, we're not sending him there because we don't believe in the death penalty, even for people who, you know, you say deserve it. So we're going to keep our prisoner here. Thank you.
And so now he's been indicted here, and he's going to be indicted in other states. If a state does not have the death penalty, is there a better chance, do you think, that he may be extradited there?
Yes, that could be. Or there could be a promise. If you bring him here, we're not going to seek the death penalty, which is probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, they just set him underground. Like
that's
you said,
right.
Send him to the Supermax, and that's it. So now this has been going on, the extradition process has been going on for over a year, hasn't it?
It has, and he has one more right to an appeal in their Supreme Court, and then it goes into the Inter-Commission on Human Rights. There's an International Commission on Human Rights. It will go there. It's just going to take its time and wind its way through, and at the end of it, you know, my guess is it's going to come to Chicago.
Ugh.
We already have a judge appointed, who's a Mexican-American judge, by the way, interestingly. And, you know, frankly, I find it frightening for these judges
to have
that
responsibility. Yeah, I would be very worried about that.
Yep, I do.
Now, do judges normally have security, or is this, or does it go on a case by case?
No, they have security. In fact, I don't know if you recall this. What was that, 10, 15 years ago? A judge's mother and husband were murdered in their house by a litigant.
Oh, no.
And ever since that happened, the marshals, who really protect the federal judges, they've really upped the ante there, and they pay a lot of money to protect these judges, and they have their homes protected, they have themselves protected. But, you know, you can't protect
all the time. Is it an all the time thing, or is it just during certain cases?
No, I don't know, and you really
and they probably don't tell you.
They probably can't tell you, and because you never know when someone's really at risk. I mean, the litigant in the case that I just talked about was a civil litigant, and the judge really didn't have anything to do with the case, really. He was a little nutty, decided this judge was at fault, wanted to kill the judge, but unfortunately for him, she wasn't home, and he actually murdered her husband and her mother. So, you know, these are kind of, you know, you get crazy people who are involved in the system, and it's not always criminals.
Right, just loons.
Just loons, right?
All right, Karen Conti's here. She's answering your legal questions as she does every Sunday night, 312-981-7200. We'll take a real quick break. We've got some people on the phone already, so we will get to your questions right after this on 720 WGN. You ready? Ready to get started?
I'm so ready.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Let's start with Laura. She's in Chicago. Laura, you're on WGN.
Yes, good evening, Brian and Karen.
Hi,
good
Laura.
Evening.
You may recall some weeks ago, a successful baseball player was killed in a boating accident with two of his friends off the coast of Florida.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes, I had only heard it one time on the news that a woman was pregnant with his child.
Oh.
Yes, his girlfriend, his living girlfriend, yeah.
They didn't say if she was his fiance, girlfriend, or a casual acquaintance. Now, I'm wondering, what is the responsibility of his estate should the child be proven to be his and his only child? Will that child and his mother get the entire estate?
This is a really interesting question, and I've never actually dealt with it. But all I can do is tell you what I think, given the law, what it would be. The mother, if she's not left in the will, if there was a will, would not be entitled to anything unless she's a spouse. Okay, so if she's a girlfriend, and it doesn't matter if she's pregnant or not, she's not entitled to anything. And the fact that the child is unborn means that there's no child support order in place. If there had been, say, past child support due, like he wasn't paying his support, the mother could petition the estate, you know, post-death, to get that money. But because there's no order in place, there's no finding of, well, there could be a finding of paternity posthumously. They could go to court and do a DNA test, I'm sure. But because it's an unborn child, that child and the mother are not going to be entitled to child support. Under my analysis of the law as it stands in Illinois, I mean, again, you know, I could be wrong and there could be a special statute on this somewhere that I'm not aware of. But it is very interesting. And, you know, the child probably, though, would be entitled to some Social Security benefits from from the father's, you know, coming from his side, if he's in, you know, if he had Social Security benefits, and but as an unborn child, the child has no rights to any part of the estate.
Oh man, Laura, thanks for the interesting call. We appreciate
it. Yeah, very interesting call.
Yeah, it was. I believe it's his fiance.
Yeah,
and because they had just posted new picture, you know. Pictures just before he went out on the boat, but that's, yeah,
and,
you know, don't think
and let
of
me
that.
Tell you what I think should happen, you know, and I don't know who his heirs are,
right.
His parents or siblings or whatever, and, you know, they should do the right thing. I mean, the right. Guy probably was making millions of dollars a year, if I understand.
Right, and it was not, I mean, this was not a hush-hush, oh,
no.
They had a life together. They
right.
were, you know.
The child should want for nothing.
Right.
And I don't know if he left behind life insurance, because that would, of course, go to whoever the beneficiary
right.
was, regardless of who is in the will. But hopefully that child will be taken care of.
I hope so, too. Ugh.
That's a sad story.
It is. Susan is in Huntley. Hi, Susan. You're on WGN.
Hello. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
I got a situation here. Actually, I'm kind of talking for a bunch of people. I live in an assisted facility, and we're being terrorized by another resident, and the staff, the administrator, and even corporate are ignoring our pleas for help. They're falling on deaf ears. The guy is going around terrorizing us. He follows us. He harasses us. He threatens violence on us. Stalks us, calls a couple of us dykes and fags. He's told people that I'm an animal killer because after I moved in here, my baby passed away from bone cancer. And,
oh.
And, she had it before I even moved in here. And,
Susan, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I want to ask you, when you go to the administration and you report this conduct, and you're not the only one, what are they telling you? What do they say to you about this?
He's got rights. He can come and go and do anything he wants.
Okay.
Well, we have rights, too. We have rights to not live in fear and terror.
Do you have anything documented, meaning, like,
yes,
is anything...
Yes, there's a lot of us.
Okay.
There's a lot of us that have stuff documented. I mean, the administrator had a 20-minute chat with him. After that, he deliberately backed his wheelchair into me.
So this is not, this goes beyond just
I mean, this
is
assault and battery.
Yeah, you're right. So have you guys
called? He's a 400-pound guy.
Have you called the police?
Yes.
And what have the police done?
Nothing.
Okay. Well, you know, they have an absolute right to make you safe and keep you safe there. That's one of their jobs. That's one of their primary jobs as an assisted care facility.
And they're not doing it.
Well, and maybe you need to hire a lawyer to write a letter. And the letter should cite the law and the standard of care, meaning it's negligent. If this guy does one thing to anybody and causes injury, they're going to be in serious trouble. There's also the license.
I mean, he hit my foot. My foot swelled up, and I had a bruise on it. And this was like 2 weeks ago. And it still hurts. I'm still limping.
And maybe you guys all want to get together and hire a lawyer to write a letter and see if we can meet with the administration to come up with a solution. This doesn't...
What kind of lawyer would they...
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, you don't need... There's no specialty lawyer
okay,
in,
yeah,
this, there, in this
that's
realm.
What I'm saying. It's just a...
You know, it's not really a personal injury lawyer. I mean, it's just anybody who... I mean, I could write the letter for you and follow up. I mean, anybody knows this is a liability risk
right.
waiting to happen. You know, there's also their licensing commissions. I mean, they have standards that they've got to abide by, and you might want to even consider reporting them to the state that licenses them, saying, you know, this is posing a very serious risk to the other people who live there, and they're not doing anything, and you should document all of your attempts to get some action. But again, I think you need to really document what this guy is doing. When I say document, you know, take pictures, you know, have statements taken, you know, pictures of your injury. I think you need to report it to the police every single time it happens. You need to submit the police reports to the administration, and you need people to listen to you. And I know when you get older, sometimes people don't like to listen to older people.
There, somebody's texting and saying, recommending an ombudsman or IDPH. Do you know anything about either one of those?
IDPH, no.
All right. Well,
Illinois Department of
Public Health.
Public Health, probably. Yeah, that's to report it there.
Well, good luck, Susan. I hope it works out for you. Should, you know, as you said, you can, they could contact you and see what, how do people contact you?
You could email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com, or you can call me at 312-332-7800.
When you're living in an assisted care facility or anything like that, how far does the facility have to go to protect you and keep
pretty
you?
Pretty far.
Their total responsibility is your safety, correct?
Well, that's correct. I mean, every level up is probably a higher standard. So, okay, you know, if you're in a hospital, obviously they've got to really protect you because you're helpless. You know, if you're in an assisted facility that is giving you medicine and all that, there's a higher standard. If it's just assisted facility, mm-hmm, you know, probably a lesser standard. But listen, their whole job is to keep you safe there.
Right.
And if there is a known risk, it's different if there's someone comes in with a gun, knocks the door down, it's never happened before.
Yeah.
They would have no control over that unless they knew that was going to happen. Here they know this guy has a problem, and he has done things in the past, according to what Susan is saying, and they need to do something. Why they're not doing something? I mean, I've heard them, you know, nursing homes kick people out.
Yeah.
You know, when certain people have certain, you know, even Alzheimer's,
right,
they become very violent in some cases.
Yeah.
And if they can't handle someone that has those tendencies, or they won't handle it, they'll kick somebody out. And I don't know why they're not doing it here.
It doesn't make sense. A lot of people saying Adult Protective Services and the Illinois Long-Term Care Ombudsman could assist. And the Adult Protective Services number is 866-800-1409.
Great.
In Illinois.
Great. Thank you for
that. From the caller, the texter from the 312, it's what they do, they said. So.
Oh, okay.
So,
good.
Susan, 866-800-1409 for the Adult Protective Services Center. So you can call them, and hopefully they can... they can direct you in the direction you need to go.
Great.
All right, let's do this then. It's news time, then more with Karen Conti. So if you have a legal question, get it in now. 312-981-7200. Go to Atlanta and say hi to Pinky. Pinky, you're on WGN.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You guys do a service for laymen throughout the country.
Well, we appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Hey, I was in a car accident recently, and I got rear-ended. And my back was damaged. And my chiropractor, he made a statement that kind of confused me. He said, I can't tell if the accident damaged your back, but I can say that it was the straw that broke the camel's back. And I just wanted to get some clarification because I've been going around and around and around with this and just trying to get some clarification on that, if I could, please.
Sure, that's a good question. And you know, generally how the law looks at this, and, it, you know, it depends from state to state, but generally the law looks at when someone hurts you, injures you, and it's their fault, because a rear end is obviously the person behind you's fault, he should have stopped sooner, that even if you had a weak back for some reason, if the straw that broke the camel's back, literally, was that action, then he's responsible for the damage that it caused. Okay? So basically, that means that if you commit negligence against somebody, you don't get to pick the person who's got a healthy back. If that person just so happens to have an unhealthy back, that's them's the breaks, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that what the chiropractor is saying is not going to stand in the way of you bringing a lawsuit or getting compensation from the person who hit you, because that's consistent with the law. If that was the straw that broke the camel's back,
Oh, well.
Right.
Thank you, guys. You've been amazing.
All right.
Good luck.
Hope it helps.
Feel better.
Take care. So it doesn't matter if you had a pre-existing condition. Like,
no.
You know, so let's say I got a bad knee. If I'm walking down the street, I get hit by a car, they completely blow out that knee. It doesn't matter that the knee was garbage before they hit it.
No, I mean, that's not to say that there's not going to be an argument from the lawyers that,
right,
hey, listen, we're really not responsible for all of this. But generally speaking, if you're fine before the accident and you're not afterwards, the law is going to allow you some recovery for your pain and suffering, distress, lost wages, scarring, whatever it is.
All right. Well, that's very good to know. And it's nice to know we're helping people in Atlanta.
Yes.
I love Atlanta.
I do.
City.
I love Atlanta, too.
All right. This is very interesting because you sent me an email earlier and you said, hey, if we need something to talk about, we can talk about this. And it just turns out that Caneville Gale from the 708 texted this question in. Recently, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump said he would sue the women who have stepped forward alleging he sexually assaulted them in the past. He promised he would do this after the election. If he were to win the presidential election, and Is he allowed to sue someone in a civil suit as a private citizen while serving as the president?
Well, he absolutely is entitled to do that. And we have some precedent for the issue of private lawsuits going on while a president is serving. Let's call him Bill Clinton.
All right.
Remember Paula Jones sued
yes.
him while he was in the White House, and he had to defend a case, and he also had to sit at a deposition. And that was, in fact, one of the reasons he was impeached, because they say he lied in his deposition
yeah.
about what happened. So, yes, a president, a sitting president, can conduct litigation, and even there's even a stronger argument if he's bringing the lawsuit as opposed to being
right.
being sued himself. So if Donald Trump wants to bring a lawsuit, he certainly can. Now,
so what would it mean? I don't know. That seems odd for a president
okay, well,
to sue a private citizen.
You know, again, I tried to stay away from politics because it's really a no-win
situation.
But
this is a legal thing.
So let me just tell you, why would anybody spend the time and money to do this? Politics is a rough and tumble area.
Right.
And people say the most horrific things and call each other names all the time. Now, are 8 women lying? You know, we can talk Bill Cosby. Are 33 women lying? You know,
okay. Yeah, now we're up to 11, I think.
So what are his damages? You know, he sues because he loses the election. What is he going to say? These women are responsible for him not being president because they said something false. Let's just assume that he can prove that it's
right.
false. Okay.
Okay.
And he brings these lawsuits, and these women are not in one place, so maybe he'd
right,
have to bring them in 8 different venues. They'd be in different lawsuits. He's going to be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyers doing this. To what end?
Yeah.
To perpetuate this and to give someone a right in court to stand up and say, I've got proof, and here's my proof. I mean, he's just talking. I don't think he means to do any of this stuff. And if he does, that's really bad judgment.
Okay.
Really bad judgment.
So this is, it's just bluster.
And don't we have better things to do with our president's time, like defend wars and make sure that our people are taken care of instead of invoking some, like, petty kind of revenge against people who are speaking out against you?
Let me ask you this then, too, on the same thing, because, again, I know we try not to talk too much about politics.
No, I don't like doing that.
But when the law is brought in, it makes it interesting. So in one of the debates, Donald Trump said that once he was president, he would get a special prosecutor to try to put Hillary Clinton in jail. The president doesn't appoint or have any control over special prosecutors, does he?
No.
He has nothing in the judicial branch.
The U.S. Attorney's Office would have to do it, and you know, does he have a say-so in who the U.S. Attorney is? Yes. But any U.S. attorney worth his salt is going to be, you know, is going to do what he thinks is right, or
right.
she thinks is right, not what Donald Trump says is right. You know,
they're not puppets of the president.
There's a big difference between being a politician, being a legislator, than being a business owner. When you're a business owner, because I'm a business owner,
right.
I can tell my employees what to do.
Exactly.
I can make really bad mistakes, and it really doesn't matter because it's my business.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have to follow the laws of employment, discrimination, and all those things. I have a lot of laws I have to follow, but I can make really bad mistakes.
Yeah.
And because I'm a dictator in my own little realm, right?
Okay. Exactly. Yeah, you're the boss.
In politics, you've got, hey, how about branches of government? How about different congressmen? How about senators? How about the law? How about the Constitution? You have so many layers of rules and regulations. You can't just go snap your fingers and do things.
Right.
You know, we have the separations, and we have all of these things that are in effect so that we don't have a dictator making decisions. And for him to talk about doing those things, I'm sorry, but it really is irresponsible. It's like saying he can do something that he can't do, and then people are sometimes nodding their heads going, yeah, that'd be great if he did it.
Work.
But it can't happen.
Well, listen, don't let facts get in the way of a good story.
Yeah, but you know what? And again, you know, I get a little serious about these issues, but I just think it's a disservice. And I really
right.
feel like it's my job sometimes as a lawyer to bring out the truth of these things.
Well, that's just it. I mean, people, as much as we think a layman thinks they understand the law, because as you know, I've learned all my lawyering from TV. I know everything about the law. Most people think like that. We don't really know the intricacies of the law. That's why there are lawyers and then judges and, you know, constitutional scholars. There's a lot of people who know a lot about this, and to just be able to say that and have people believe it is silly.
And I'll just say one other thing, and this maybe is more of an opinion. You know, Donald Trump seems to me has used the legal system to kind of bully people. So if he doesn't like something, he doesn't pay for something. If some people sue him, he'll defend it. He'll put his mm-hmm. lawyers on it, or he'll sue people. And he has brought Google Donald Trump's lawsuits. You'll see how he sued over, you know, he used to put up a flag at his expensive house, and it was too big, and he got fined, and he sued. And I mean, you can use the system to bully people, and that's okay if you're an individual. I mean, I'm not going to pass judgment on that. But when you're president, you get held to a different standard.
You can't do that.
Do we want our president running around to courthouses testifying against women who said they were groped by him? I don't know where we're going with that. And why would you even say it? I don't know.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
His handlers should have handled that a little bit better.
Listen, it's like trying to stop a tornado.
I think it is.
You could throw up a fence, but it's blowing right past it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get to Julie. She's been hanging on in Mount Prospect. Hi, Julie. You're on WGN.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
I'm just looking for some guidance here and direction, and I'm going to try to be very precise and not go all over the place. But it's essentially, I'm married, and about 4 months ago, I myself and my husband, we were kicked out from his parents' place, okay? And we are in a transitional situation of finding somewhere to live. And it was very abusive and it just was not a good situation. But then after about staying in a hotel for about a week and we couldn't really afford to do that, he decided he was going to go back to his parents. And I said, I don't agree with that, considering the fact that I was now no longer able to go back. And to me, it was a lack of support. So basically, it's been 4 months, actually, more than that. And now, during this time, I basically had a nervous breakdown in the sense where I said, listen, I can't live like this. You know, we had other options. You know, we could have stayed with my family, my brother. He didn't want to do it. And basically, it's like abandonment and desertion. I know it's not a whole year, but our accounts aren't together. I've been taking care of myself. And essentially what I did during this time, because he refused to go look for an apartment, you know, and I need stability. So I said, that's it. And instead of running an apartment then on my own, I said, you know what? The rates are good. If I can afford something by myself, I'm going to. And so essentially I found a place. I'm going to be closing on it. My question to you is this, or who would I need to maybe contact? I'm looking for protection for me, in the sense where I understand when you're married, so it's kind of like, and it's not a legal separation. I'm being told that he would have to be there at closing, and he would have to either sign some sort of homestead document or whatnot. And I guess my thing is, you know, I'd want to be protected in the sense my family is helping me financially with this as
well. Okay, hold on, Julie. I'm going to make this real simple. When you're married, everything you buy during the course of the marriage is marital property, meaning he's going to own a portion of it, unless you've used money that was gifted to you and that you've put the home in your name only. But if you're using money that you earned during the marriage, or you sold an asset and you're buying something new with marital monies, that is going to be his too. It's a really bad idea to buy a piece of property when you're divorcing someone or and you're still married to someone and you don't want to share it with them. You can't protect yourself from this. There's no legal way to protect yourself. If you buy a home and it's not because you're not buying it with non-marital money, like inheritance money, that's going to be his too.
Okay, yeah, so my parents are gifting me money, but I guess my thing is there isn't a way to have my attorney draw up documents stating, and it, you know, and if he's willing to sign off on it, I guess is what I'm wondering. And real quick, one more thing is, the money I'm putting down is, so for example, in this time frame of being married, we sold his townhouse. He got all the money for that. I didn't get anything. I had a condo. I sold the condo. And I got that money.
Okay, so this all doesn't matter. It's really what money is being used. You know, the safe way to do it, Julie, is to have your parents buy it and put it in their name. And then when you're divorced, because it looks like that's the way you're heading, then they can gift that property to you. Why buy it in your name and run the risk at all that he's going to take half of it? That's just ridiculous. And if he signs off on it, sure. But, again, you're going to have to paper that, and you're going to have to make sure it's solid, because it can't just be like a loose agreement between you and your husband. It has to be something, you know, you might really talk to a family law lawyer right now to get a full recitation of what your rights are and what your obligations are going to be, because this is too much money involved, too much at stake for you to make a rash decision.
And even if he, you know, he took, he has had all his money from his sale of his...
Doesn't matter.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, no, so. It's fairness has nothing to do with it at this point. You know, what happened in the past, you acquiesce to, the court would say, you know, you let it happen, so then we're not going to... It's water under the bridge. But this is new, and this is something you want to keep, and you're going to... He's going to fight you on it if he wants to. And I guarantee you, if you're at odds, he's going to do that.
Okay, and then just in a perfect world, if he were to not fight me on it, let's just say we get a divorce. Is that okay, or does he still get money? If he, you know what I mean?
You know, I can't. There's too many hypotheticals there. And I don't know all your finances, and I don't know exactly how the house is going to be held. So these are things that I'm just giving you concepts and general ideas, but I can't really give you specific advice on, you know, on what might happen. You know, this is hard.
Yeah, I understand. And then one more thing with 401k in our state, do you know by chance, is he entitled to mine and I'm entitled to his?
Yes,
you know?
Yes. And anything that is acquired in that 401k during the marriage is marital, meaning they're each entitled to a portion of it. But if it's earned prior to the marriage, that, generally speaking, will stay yours and yours only.
All right. Well, good luck, Julie. It sounds like quite a quagmire.
A lot of issues, and that's why you have to sit down with a family law lawyer, because, again, I can't give specific advice. How do I know when she got this 401k? Was it before the marriage and partly? And, you know, and all these things are way too important not to spend a little time with a lawyer.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're saying if you think you're getting divorced, if things are going that way, get divorced and have your ducks in a row and then go through with it. Then you can start making plans for the future after. But while you're still embroiled in the relationship, everything is still connected, right?
I just had a client come to me really briefly, and she put in about $700,000 of inheritance money into a house.
Oh.
Knowing that they were kind of getting divorced.
Oh, no.
Well, she's like, well, I'll get that money back, right? And I'm like, no, you just gifted that to what we call gifted it to the marital estate, meaning I put it into the house, and the house was in joint name. So that $700,000 that your grandmother gave you now belongs half at least to your husband.
Oh no!
So you know, the time to think about all these things is way before they happen. Even during a good marriage, you should know what your rights are.
Well, how do people get a hold of you to find out answers to questions?
It's Kay Conti, KConti at kcontilaw.com, 312-332-7800.
All right, more with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. Chris has been hanging on. He's in Bridgeview. Chris, we got about 2 minutes. Welcome.
Hey, I was just wondering if there's anything such as just an accident, or is there always somebody at fault?
You know, that's a good question. You know, it really is a good question. But I guess you'd have to give me some more specifics on it. You know, generally speaking, you know, there's certain things that are just an accident. Like, for instance, you trip on your own shoelaces. Obviously, that's an accident. You're talking about if someone else does something that causes it, is it ever just an accident? And you probably have to give me a good example of it.
I don't know. Somebody who's at a stoplight and he thinks that he sees the guy in front of him go forward, and then he looks to the left, he goes forward. It's an accident. He didn't do it on purpose. He didn't do it on purpose. It's just an accident.
Well, if you're talking about
it seems like there's a fault for everybody's going to be blamed for anything. Can't anybody just say, hey, it's an accident?
Well, there's two parts to this. One is it a crime? Like, I've seen a lot of cases where people are, you know, they swerve and they hit somebody and they kill somebody and they make it into a crime.
Right.
And I don't know that I always agree with that, because sometimes it's just negligence. You know, should you be punished for hurting somebody when you didn't intend to do it?
Right.
I don't always think that that's appropriate. But when it comes to negligence, meaning bringing a civil lawsuit, Chris, there's usually, you know, if you are that person who rear-ends the person, you were probably negligent in that you should have looked again before you put your foot on the gas. And that's the way that, you know, that's not my opinion. That's the way the judge would look at it. That's the way the law looks at it. Somebody who hit somebody with a car was probably driving too close or too fast for conditions, or didn't check or didn't signal or didn't do something. So
doesn't mean you're a bad person.
No, from a civil standpoint, you know, our laws are set so that the person who is at fault it pays.
Yeah.
And that's why we have insurance, because even good drivers who don't intend to hurt anyone or do something wrong, who make mistakes, their insurance covers it. So there's nothing really wrong with that. But if you're saying that everything sometimes now seems like a crime, I kind of agree with you.
Yeah.
Not everything's a crime. Not every, you know, person who screws up should be put in jail for it.
No, but I also believe that's, like you said, why we have insurance. And if, you know what, you didn't know, you didn't mean to rear-end that guy in front of you, but you did. And yes, it's an accident, but somebody's still responsible.
Between the two of the people, the innocent one and the one who screwed up, who was careless, it should definitely be the person whose fault it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's what our system says.
And there
I didn't make that up.
There is fault. You know.
We have fault in our system.
We
do.
All right. Listen, that's enough law for today. We got to move on. You got to go home.
That was a lot of fault.
A lot of law. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me with the facts of your case at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And Steve Cochran Show, Wednesday morning.
6:30, 4:30, 4:40, yeah.
Somewhere after the 6:30 news.
That's right.
All right. We will not be here next week, you and I, because of the Blackhawks are playing.
Okay.
We can still, you know, maybe we could call people, just wander around giving free law advice on the street.
We could be, but go Cubs.
But we probably won't.
Go Cubs.
You're right up there, too. You're not too far from that neighborhood.
That's right.
You'll be all crazy.
All right,
we'll talk to you in a couple weeks, and have a lovely time.
Okay,
let's do this.
Too.
We will say goodbye after this on WGN. Thanks for listening and for being part of the program. Thank you, Cody. Thank you, Roger. Don't forget, we will be going on Facebook Live momentarily to start our web-exclusive podcast. Hope you will join us there, and then be listening here, because Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. The news is sponsored by Indiana, a state that works. A little after 9 o'clock, here's Roger Badish.